everybody, and welcome to Minute 3 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Hello, I have returned. My brief
You were missed yesterday, but you know, as you said, there were more insights that you wouldn't have been able to have given us. So, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Okay. So minute 3 begins with a shot of an intense old man looking scared or worried or something like that, and ends with the family running to help.
Some of them running, not finishing up running, and some of them don't bothering to run.
Well, whatever. We'll talk about this in the final episodes of this film. But the shots there do not match up with the shots here. So you know, the people there and the people here are not necessarily they didn't use the same take, I guess you can say. So, you know, you can definitely tell the difference between them. But, you know, this whole minute that we get today is just mostly shots of the actor that, you know, we discussed a little bit on Monday, Harrison Young, just, you know, it's showing his acting ability.
Yeah.
Because he's able to hold this entire minute all by himself. Just by his facial expressions, which is great. I mean, he was born in 1930. So on D-Day, he was 14 years old. So it's not as if, you know, he theoretically was old enough to have actually been, you know, at D-Day or fighting during World War II and things like that. But he was still able to show us what it looks like. You know, or the type of fear or anticipation or ambivalence, you know, that this character is going through. I mean, we still don't know who this character is. We just know that the movie is called Saving Private Ryan, you know, but I mean, and we'll get to a little bit more into this tomorrow, but they do a great fake out for us here.
It's the fake. Well, yeah, we'll talk more about it tomorrow. I don't think it's meant to be a fake out. We'll get tomorrow. But yeah, the anguish, the sadness, like the many expressions going over this guy's face. He has lived a cursed life, I think. The ending of this film, it feels, I guess, but I'm not on for the earn this scene. So I'm going to talk about it now. I'm going to.
You can if you'd like to. Sure.
It's a curse that that Miller puts on him. Like, earn this. Earn all of these people who you didn't ask to sacrifice themselves to save you have done, and now you must live your entire life deserving that. Like, earning their sacrifice so that you're not allowed to just be a normal guy. You've got to do. This guy has had a horrible life. I think just trying to live up to that massive burden dropped upon him unwillingly. So I feel like you just got to channel that burden into this guy's performance, and he does a great job with that. And the emotion that he displays is incredible. But I feel like. Just thinking about that. Hey, what if all of these people? What if you're just some kid? Just some kid who like signed up for war, or were drafted or whatever, and a bunch of strangers come up to you one day. It's like, oh, hey, two of our mates died trying to save you, and then we're all gonna die as well, apart from the most irritating one. I don't get to talk about the group, but Ryben. I hate Ryben. no.
I actually love Ryben. I think he's great.
I think he survives. It's awful.
No. First of all, I'm a big fan of Edwards. I think he's a great actor and a great director.
We'll stop talking there, I guess. He's excellent at playing.
Yes.
I just can't work out where he's from in this film. I'm not sure where it is. It just bothers me every time he survives. It just over all of the rest of the better characters. Just imagine you're just some kid, and these people come up to you, our two mates died, we're all going to die apart from this one and this one. And then you got to earn that, and you just can't be a normal guy. It's bad enough. All the soldiers coming back from World War II, all of the veterans, they have forms of PTSD, whatever, all these things to get through. He has that, but also on top of that, he knows that these people died specifically so he could live. And that is just a curse. And I feel so sorry for him. And this performance just cements that. he's tried to, he's not, the whole point is he's not some special guy. He's just a guy. He's just a needle in a sack of needles. He's just another one. And he just, maybe he's tried to live and do such great things, but he's just not able to. He doesn't have that promise, doesn't have that spark inside of him to live a thrilling and momentous life. He's just a guy, and you can't do that. You can't put that on someone. You just can't do it. So it sucks. Sorry, it sucks.
Okay, you have the right to that opinion. It's okay. What can I tell you? Now, do you know where this scene or this entire minute is taking place?
It's in the cemetery. I forget which one it is. There's a bunch of them. I've been to one. I've not been to this one, but it's in one of the cemeteries in France.
It's known as the Saint Laurent Military Graveyard, also known as the Normandy American Cemetery and Memorial, and it actually overlooks Omaha Beach. Do you have any guess as to how many men are buried in this cemetery? I'll tell you, it's more than just D-Day. It's around that.
Is this a trick question? Time. Are they actually buried there?
You mean where they're filmed? They did film it in this. From my understanding is that they did film it in the cemetery. There? So it's not like it's a fake.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Yes. They didn't. Okay. They didn't return these bodies.
How many? Too many. But I don't know. I wouldn't like.
Okay, 9,388. Okay. Yes, completely. Again, these are not only the men who died on D-Day, but there are others that died, during the Allied fight in France. But some of the information that I found here is just amazing. First of all, it's 172 and a half acres, this entire cemetery. Like I said, it has 9,388 grave sites. But if you want to break down the grave sites, first of all, there are Americans that were shot down over France, even from 2 years beforehand, that were interned here afterwards. And there are even four American women that were buried here. Most of the, that they allowed families to decide whether they want to keep the bodies there or whether they want them to be brought back to the U.S. But apparently 9,000 plus decided that they were going to keep it, keep it the way it is. Because this was originally a temporary burial ground, they buried the bodies and then they would reinter them if people requested that they be moved. There are the headstones that we see there. So there are basically two types. There are either crosses or Stars of David. The crosses were for the Protestants and Catholics, and there are 151 Stars of David for the Jews that died at this time.
So there are only two options.
At the time.
So if there was like an atheist.
Correct.
They would be forced to be buried beneath a symbol of oppression and.
I believe so. Yes.
Buried under this thing of like nonsense and hate mongering and deceit and oppression is above them, and that's, they're just stuck there forever. Great. Good to know. So,
well, the family had true. A choice to take it back.
I would hope they were able to.
Basically, those are the only two religions that were recognized by the U.S. Army, which is why there are no other types of markers. Okay, both Protestants and Catholics are buried under the cross.
Brothers probably
from well. That one. There are 45 pairs of brothers who are buried there. 30 of them are buried side by side.
15 didn't get on.
Apparently. There's a father and a son. Yeah. There's an uncle and his nephew. There are two pairs of cousins, three generals, four cousins? Chaplains, four civilians.
That seems like there's 45 apparently. Brothers, but only two pairs of cousins? That seems the wrong way around.
I would agree with you. There are three generals, four chaplains, four civilians, four women, 147 African-Americans, and 20 Native Americans that are all buried there. There are 304 unknown soldiers that are buried there, where it states on the grave marker, "Here rests in honored glory, a comrade in arms known only to God." There are 1,500 servicemen that were declared missing in action during Operation Overlord. 19 of the names that are mentioned there's a memorial that has the name of all these 1,500 servicemen, and there 19 of them have a bronze star next to them, stating that they actually found the body and identified it, since they had dedicated the cemetery and they were buried there somewhere else. Among some of the famous names that are buried there, you have three Medal of Honor recipients, including Teddy Roosevelt Jr., who was the son of President Teddy Roosevelt, who died basically of a heart attack the day after the invasion. I don't know if you ever seen The Longest Day? I have,
but it's been a long time.
Okay, so that's the character played by Henry Fonda, who is running on the beach with a cane. And he surprisingly died the following day of a heart attack. I know that you're also a fan of Band of Brothers, like I am. So Dick Winters was supposed to get a Medal of Honor, and because they gave Teddy Roosevelt the Medal of Honor, they don't give two people on the same day or the same actions and things like that. So Dick Winters didn't get one because of that.
Stupid rule.
Because they. I don't know what to tell you about that. I don't make those rules. after burying Teddy Roosevelt Jr. there, so he had a brother who was killed in World War I, and they moved his body so that he would be buried next to them. Who else? Two of the Nyland brothers, Preston and Robert, are buried here, and they are. The Nyland brothers is partially what this movie's story is based on. So it's pretty interesting that he's in that basically. we'll talk about this throughout the movie, but okay, here we have spoiler for anyone who has never seen this movie. Okay, this is actually Private James what? Ryan. Okay, now he's showing up. Exactly. He's showing up at the cemetery and he's going to the grave of Captain Miller. But why isn't he going to the grave of his two brothers that died there? That should also be buried next. There.
But they didn't die for him.
Well, everyone looks a little, it doesn't look as if they're familiar with the place. It's not like they can say, oh, we've been here for an hour and a half already. You know, let's get on with it already. Whose grave are you going to? Because again, as we talk about, we'll talk about at the end of this movie, nobody seemed to know who John Miller was. You know, it wasn't something that Ryan has discussed with anyone in his family, even his wife.
From what I'm aware of, that's fairly common with people that came back from war, is they didn't want to talk about it.
Okay, but he says we're going to Normandy for the this scene supposedly takes place on D-Day 1998, okay, which means that it was 44 years after, 54 years after D-Day. Okay. You'd think that if James Ryan says to his wife, let's go take a trip to Normandy for D-Day, and we're going to bring all the kids, and we'll bring the grandkids, and because I want to go look at some graves there. And they'd be like, oh, whose grave do you want to go see? I can't tell you.
Here's what I think
it's happened. It's a secret.
The family is like, dad, granddad, we're all going on a family holiday to France. And he's like, oh, that sounds lovely. Can I come to it? And he'll go, and that morning, like, dad, we got a surprise for you. We're going to the Normandy cemetery. And you could go and it means that you were in the war, we're gonna go. And it was a surprise. And so this has just been thrust upon him that morning. And he's like, I don't want to go. They're like, no, come on. They just basically forced him to go. And like, go, blah, 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 whatever. And then they've ruined his whole day. What made it? I don't know. So I this might not have been his idea. This might have been their idea. This might be like, it would be nice for dad to do. I can see that happening.
Okay, I like that idea, except for the fact that, again, according to the novelization, this scene takes place on D-Day. Yeah,
that's fine.
1998.
Okay. Still be the case.
Again, no, but why would they surprise their father by saying, hey, we're going to go on D-Day?
You ever heard of a coincidence?
We want to go to France, and they're not going to mention... I've heard of a coincidence, but I don't think... I don't think that this class... This falls into that category. Sorry.
Spielberg. Spielberg is his career is made on cheesiness and coincidences. Like, there's a whole other James F. Ryan they fight in his film with brothers.
That is true. Okay, no, I'm just, again, it's plausible what you've just mentioned, but I don't know. I like my idea a little bit. Because it, yes. Okay, we'll give that to you. We'll give it to you. So basically, we just have this entire minute of Ryan walking through the graves. You know, I gotta say they shoot it really well. You know, the fact that all of these, you know, all these graves are lined up so symmetrically. And, you know, just the way that that the camera moves, you know, moves to the side as he's walking and follows him along. You know, we see another veteran standing there by one of the graves. You know what? Now that I think about it, I'm actually going to say that this probably doesn't take place on D-Day.
There'd be more
and I will tell you why I think that, because if it,
yeah,
there would be a hell of a lot more people that should be there. So maybe I'm going to have to ask Max Collins when I interview him, why did you decide to have this take place on D-Day? He might say that was what was written in the script, but they wouldn't save on extras.
Maybe.
I should probably start writing down all these questions.
There are graves that are behind the camera. there's like thousands of people just behind the camera.
They had to clear them away in order to make the scene more emotional. That he's standing there by himself.
Yeah.
You know, but again, he really, it's unfortunate that this actor, you know, doesn't have more prominent roles, because he really is able to hold this entire minute really well.
Yeah. I mean, there's,
you know, and believably, I mean, we can even see you can see that he has the airborne pin on his, windbreaker also.
Yeah.
So, you know, they give us a little bit of a hint as to who he is.
This is why I'm thinking,
because
like his clothing, it makes me feel like this was thrust upon him, because he's not really like dressed up for the occasion. He's got the airborne pin, but the rest of him, he's just kind of wearing old guy vacation clothes, like a tucked in polo and some trousers. Like, he's not really.
Right.
Whereas the guy he walks past is in full. Like dress, he's in a suit. He's like dressed for the occasion. So,
correct.
Yeah.
Okay, it is possible. The, you know, and so he starts to kneel down in front of in front of one of the graves, and he starts sobbing, and then we see the son and daughter-in-law and wife run towards them, and the little boy starts to run a little bit. But he gets stopped by his siblings.
It's never no question for me. It's fine.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, you don't really need to go there. That's right. I actually did find on IMDb a credit for this kid.
I found it too. Yeah.
His name is Thomas Gisbert, and it is his only credit is Saving Private Ryan. So my assumption is he's probably the child of someone who, you know, was working there, and they decided to give him a little part, similar to, you know, John McTiernan giving his stepson or possibly his son a role as John Jr. in the original Die Hard. I don't know. I couldn't find any other Gisberts that were listed on IMDb.
There is a Thomas Gisbert on Instagram. Yeah.
Yes, I saw that. But I did see that.
I don't know if it's the same guy. Yeah.
And that I don't know either. I wasn't gonna write to him and say, were you that little kid in that first and last scene on Saving Private Ryan?
Why did you stop running?
That's right. Did they tell you to start running?
Did you start running and then realize, oh, I shouldn't be running? Tell us. Yeah.
Exactly.
And two of the granddaughters are credited as well. Nina and Abby Mushalik. Only two. Who they appear to be twins. And they did some stuff, but not a lot. One of them was Saucy Wood Nymph in Guest House Paradiso in 1999. So, make of that what you will. They're both Saucy Wood Nymph in Guest House Paradiso. Must be twins.
Well, one of them passed away.
This year, yeah.
Nina passed away in 2020.
Yeah. What did I say? Oh, yeah, no, you're right. Sorry.
2020.
I read 2024.
Four years ago. We are no longer in 2020. I know you are still... I've just been in a void
for a day yesterday. That's really thrown me around as to what, like, I was here and then I was not here and then I'm back again. Is it the same week?
Okay, that is fair. Right. I mean, Abby Mushkalik's most recent credit is Once Upon a Time in Hollyweird. Which I have no idea what that is. But IMDb doesn't give us any information about them. Except for the fact that, as you said, they are probably sisters. I'd
be very surprised if they're not.
Or cousins.
Yeah, if they're not related in some cousins. Way, that is a hell of a coincidence.
That's right. Well, she was the Nina who passed away was in The World Is Not Enough. She was in a Bond film. She plays Verushka.
One of the worst ones, yes.
I don't remember who Verushka was. Do you remember who Verushka was?
I don't.
In the World,
no. But Once Upon a Time in Hollyweird has another Saving Private Ryan alumni in it. It has Tom Sizemore, who has also passed away.
Yes, who passed away recently.
Yeah. But, hell of a cast. Cillian Murphy, Eric Roberts, Harvey Keitel, Crispin Glover. Oh, it's a documentary.
No, but it's so archival. Well, it says Thriller. It doesn't even say. On IMDb, it does not say that it's.
There's a bunch of people playing themselves. Michael Madsen playing himself goes missing. And Rick Blaine, Tom Sizemore, is called to investigate. It's a Tarantino style murder mystery. Once Upon a Time in Hollyweird. Okay, sure. So they got a bunch of Tarantino cast members.
Yeah, it has a 2.3 ranking on rating on IMDb.
Yep. So that's the next season for you. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood Minute.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
Quite possibly. Okay. So Cillian Murphy, David Carradine, Roy Scheider, and Harvey Keitel appear via archival footage of an unreleased movie, Red Light Runners, which was filmed in 2003.
Okay, Ashfield. Sure.
So. Yep.
Liz from Shaun of the Dead. Anyway.
So basically, as this old man is waiting for people to run up to him, to comfort him, the minute ends. So do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I do not. It has been covered. Yes.
Okay. Excellent. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called World War II Wednesday. Thank you once again to Jay for helping to figure out the alliteration of that. I'll give you credit. Why not? You deserve it.
So that one was
easy. It was. Well, we were debating between weekend and Wednesday, and you suggested Wednesday, so there you go. The idea here is to give a top five World War II movies. You know, obviously, I leave it a little bit open as to what one we might consider a World War II movie. You know, it could be, are we talking about, something that just deals with battles, or maybe it's something that could possibly be dealing with things that take place during World War II, not necessarily on the battlefield. But we'll see what Jay has for us. So, Jay, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
So I went with ones that actually involve the war in some fashion. So not just like this happened to be occurring somewhere else at the same time. They involve the war. I had like a four-way tie for number five. I've narrowed it down to one, don't worry. But I only did that just before I started talking now. So the honorable mentions are The Dirty Dozen, Atonement, and Jojo Rabbit. I liked all three of those a great deal. But my number five that I went for is Bridge on the River Kwai, a film I've only seen once, but I remember really, really loving it and need to watch it again sometime. But that's excellent. Number four.
Maybe I will help you with that.
At some point. Who knows? Number four, Dunkirk. I thought Dunkirk was incredible. I loved the use of time. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan. So I'm on board with most of his films. And I just really enjoyed how Dunkirk played out and all the different timelines and things. Well, it's great. Number three is this film, Saving Private Ryan, a near perfect film, as we talked about. It's really, really good, as you're going to hear about over the next most of the year. Number two, speaking of Tarantino-style films, Inglourious Basterds is number two. It's just so much fun. It's my favorite Tarantino film. I love everything in it. It's all great. And number one is The Great Escape. Of course it is. It's The Great Escape. It's familiar to fans of your show, I would hope. A film you and I have talked about for at least 11 episodes in the past. It's just a delightful film that's in my top four films of all time on Letterboxd and will remain so possibly forever. Who knows? I love it so much.
Okay, very fair. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that, Jay. Jay, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Jay Clewitt?
Sure. So Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is still going as we cover Deep Blue Sea again, scene by scene, and also films similar to Deep Blue Sea. But if you want to hear my co-host Mark and I talk about another film, chapter by chapter, we did Con Air, the podcast where we went through the Nicolas Cage, John Cusack, John Malkovich film Con Air, scene by scene, over 40 chapters, although 39 and 40 kind of got merged together. And if you've talked about the novelization of Saving Private Ryan, there's one for Con Air, and I bought it, and I read it in a single train journey, because it's not long. And then I talked about that on the last episode, so if you really want to hear me talk about the Con Air novelization, how it's different or the same, then check out episode 39 and 40 of Con Air of the podcast.
All right, very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And you can, if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.